This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's hour number three, and coming up in this hour, Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll talk NFL. A couple of questions as we get ready for even more mini camps and whatnot. We'll talk about the Deshaun Watson situation, what exactly is going on there, and what is expected to go along there. We've been talking about it this morning as more civil suits keep coming up and more deeper analysis into the details of what these civil suits bring. There's going to be a big pressure on the NFL on their suspension. They've got to land it. If you go too light, it's going to feel like you don't take it seriously. If you go too strong, well, it wasn't a criminal matter. Somewhere along the line, there's going to be somebody saying, criticizing what this decision is going to be. But nevertheless, the NFL really should maximize this penalty if indeed they find enough there in their own internal investigation. But they're also going to be, you know, the Cleveland Browns are also going to be in a position to have to sell Deshaun Watson when it's all said and done. We'll talk to Eric about that, as well as Jimmy Garoppolo. That's more of a football-oriented issue rather than something involving civil cases. This is exactly what the 49ers plan to do with Jimmy Garoppolo, that they're waiting on Trey Lance. I found it interesting last week, we were talking to Bonte Hill about the NBA Finals, talking Golden State, and I kind of told him as we were leaving, he's our guy for the 49ers when we do our season previews, that, you know, he has come on to talk 49ers football with us a number of times. And he was all jazzed up for Trey Lance era to start. And I'm curious as to what does that mean for Jimmy Garoppolo in terms of where he could go. But also back to the Browns, where does Baker Mayfield go? And if you're Baker Mayfield, how do you play for an organization that absolutely doesn't want you, but is sort of convenient for you? Now, don't get me wrong. He will play and try to play as hard as he can because he really does want a starting job in this league. And the only way to show that you can be a starter in this league is to play well as a starter in this league. So anytime you're out there on the field not being good because you may be feeling slighted, it goes against your ultimate resume. But I'm still curious as to the relationship between Baker Mayfield and the organization, because it is one thing to say, I will fill in because he's hurt. It's another thing to be, oh, you need me now because you messed up and you got a guy that's now going to be suspended for a year, maybe even longer, based on these accusations that you knew about when you were making the deal to bring him in and get rid of me. Well, it's kind of a nice little soap opera angle. Coming up, NBA playoffs and why one question about legacy doesn't seem to be going away despite many people wanting it to go away. I got that for you next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Game three of the NBA Finals will be in Boston on Wednesday night. Golden State is tied up the series on Sunday. So we're 1-1. And look, there are always large picture things that we want to discuss in the media. And sometimes they're legitimate issues. There's legitimate legacy talk, if you will. There's a legitimate, you know, what does this mean in the big picture way? But there is also sometimes we generate this just to make talking points when it really doesn't matter. This next one sort of fits in the middle. I think there's a legitimate reason to discuss this certain question. But I also think when you really take two steps backwards, it's almost insane that we are actually having this conversation. So it involves Steph Curry. It not only involves Steph Curry, but it involves whether or not he needs a NBA Finals MVP award for his legacy. Now, personally, I don't think he does. I think that there are circumstances within a finals appearance that you can play particularly well, but you're not the MVP. And actually pursuing an MVP could actually be detrimental to your team. So if you had a player that was hell-bent on winning the MVP, like deep down, the only thing he was like, I'm winning the series, but I'm getting the MVP. He can be a detractor for what you may want to do. Golden State has won 3 NBA championships. Andre Iguodala won the first one, but Kevin Durant won the next 2. That's no knock on Curry. Curry was playing with the best player in the NBA. But Curry is the guy that has been at the forefront of this success. He is the face of this organization. He is the reason that they are as successful as they are. It all really starts with him. As good as Klay Thompson is, as good as Draymond Green contributes, and as all-world as Kevin Durant was when he arrived, in the end, this has always been Steph Curry's team. That being said, would we like to have an NBA Finals on the resume of Steph Curry, depending on where you put him in the hierarchy? Sure. Be a nice addition. Is it necessary? I don't think it's necessary. But remember, those parameters change all the time when it comes to sports. And we do it with every athlete, and we do it with every circumstance. The NBA, greatness has always been defined by titles. When it became like, okay, well, if it's defined by titles, then it became, but you also can't lose. We did this in the NFL for a bit. Remember? Joe Montana had 4. Terry Bradshaw had 4. Neither one of them lost. Well, Brady, well, he had lost. So that was that tarnishing the overall accomplishment of what he was doing? We change it all the time. My point is that we establish it and then we alter it. Yeah, but I think we're doing a little bit of that with Steph Curry. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't like legacy questions that are going on during these finals right now, because I think legacy answers come much later when we have some sort of context as to where it all fits. Right? We sort of see certain teams in the moment, and then we go, oh, this is going to go down as one of the greatest, and yet 5 years down the road, it becomes almost forgettable, because it didn't make sort of the same historical impact that we thought it was. Maybe Golden State is a bit different, because maybe Golden State, this is just an extra chapter in a book that has not yet been written, right? This is an extra chapter in something that we have been talking about and discussing for the last 8 years. The highs, incredibly highs, lows, even lower than lows, and now highs again, journey of this basketball team over the last 8 seasons. I don't like when people say, this will put him here. We don't know, because we don't know, again, how people will define where he's going. And in the end, it doesn't really matter where Steph Curry is going. It's really just a kind of casual conversation among fans. But it isn't like there is a definitive answer into all of these sports debates. So I do think legacy questions have a place in sports. I don't think they have a place in the sport as we are pursuing the end of one of the chapters in the many books of the Golden State Warriors, if that makes any sense. Right? I don't think it's fair to put the burden on Steph Curry to not only win this series against a very good Celtics team, oh, but also make sure you do it in a way that you win the MVP. Otherwise, your legacy isn't as complete. Can he just get through this series? If he sets up Jordan Poole to be the MVP, then that's, in my mind, is fine. As long as in the end, Golden State is the champions of this journey. If they're not, we're not having the conversation, because he's not going to win the MVP. That's likely going to go to Jason Tatum, right? Who knows? But the reality of it is that their book has not been completed. I shouldn't even say book. This chapter isn't completed yet. So I think it's unfair, because, again, are we looking at this now and saying that somehow this is the end of the road, right? So even if he doesn't get it, he'll look ahead and possibly get another one. I love this series for everything that's on paper. I have not liked this series for what I'm seeing on the court. We haven't had two of the best games that you can get from these two teams that are really, really evenly matched. And I would put the edge to Golden State, but they're still, both teams are evenly matched. This is a very good matchup. This has got a lot of interesting angles to it in terms of how Boston defends, now Golden State exploits, and all of the things that we've been talking about, how Steve Kerr and the Warriors are so experienced, and Ime Udoka and the Celtics are so inexperienced when it comes to this stage. Which star has to step up? Which role player has to contribute? Can Golden State continue to win games when Klay Thompson isn't productive? And can Boston win games if they don't get the same output from Marcus Smart, Al Horford, and Jaylen Brown as they're expecting, right? Can that occur, right? All of those things. But so far, we have not reached where this series could be on the court. On the court, this has not been the product that we are seeing. If you were to put these two teams in a video game based on the matchup and somehow utilizing the ratings and numbers, you would get much closer games via computer than you actually are on the court. Now, I hope that Wednesday night's game really can showcase some of these elements, because I think that while we got them in spurts, certainly in the first half of game two, for example, where it was really close at halftime, even in game one, but more in game two, I really felt like it was the matchup that we were hoping for was really there in game two, because I saw a Golden State team do so many things right and a Boston team that was hanging around just enough to make it interesting. I remember I told you guys on Monday, I thought Boston would win that game. Even though they trailed by two at halftime, I thought that they would win that game because I was like, man, they're hanging around just enough. They're not doing anything super exciting or super, super flashy, but they keep knocking down key shots. Whenever you felt like Golden State was making a little run, here would be Boston. They'd get a bucket. They'd get a rebound. They'd get another bucket. And all of a sudden, they only trail by three. And I thought that's enough to make me think that the methodical way Boston is scoring is countering the splashy, explosive way Golden State is, and that way Boston's doing it has more chance to be successful. But I was completely wrong, because in the third quarter, Golden State just blew them out. Golden State said, you want flashy, exciting, energetic, we'll give it to you so much, you won't be able to handle it. And that's exactly what they did, a 35-14 third quarter that just ended the game. So I don't think, again, going back to my original point, I don't think that these legacy questions when it comes to Steph Curry and needing a finals MVP, I don't think it's necessary. But the other important thing is, I don't think it's necessary at this moment when we don't really know how this is going to play out. Again, we are talking about win this series first and then figure out who the MVP is to add to a guy that has done so much. But let me ask this. Let me ask this. Those of us who have been on the journey with the Golden State Warriors, have you been an NBA fan for the last 8 years? Have you been an NBA fan longer? Whether you love them, don't like them, couldn't care less, whatever it is, you know how good this team has been. Remember, they didn't need Kevin Durant at all. Even though they were coming off a loss to LeBron and the Cavaliers, they had a 3-1 series lead in that. They were going to be the favorites once again going into the 2016-17 season. They didn't need Durant. They got him. They won two titles. But they didn't need him. Right? All of that being said, would we really talk about Steph Curry in a negative light 10 years from now if he doesn't have one of these? Like, picture an NBA conversation in a bar 10 years from now. And you're like, yeah, well, you know, Luka's getting up there. He's 33 right now. You can see a loss. Oh, I remember 10 years ago, man, when he was great. He was so great. You know, but remember Steph Curry? Yeah. Like how good would you put Steph Curry in today's NBA? Well, I still think he could play in the modern NBA. He's still got, I think, you know, even though it's been 6 or 7 years since he left the league, but the thing that always bothered me about Steph is he never won a finals MVP. Yeah, you know, 5, 6 rings, championship appearances. I mean, he never got that MVP in that finals. I don't think you're going to have that kind of conversation. I don't think it's as glaring. I do think it is a talking point that people are creating to sort of add an element to this series, that little extra that sort of kicks it, like, okay, Steph Curry could win another title, but would he also win the MVP award for finals MVP that's eluded him? But I don't think when we talk about the greatness of this player and the importance of this player to the history of this league, how he changed the game, how he won titles, how he took a dead franchise and made him one of the most powerful, valuable franchises in the game, I don't think we'll be saying, yeah, but. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. Eric Edholm will join us at 40 past the hour. We will be talking NFL with him as we continue with his wake-up call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, breaking news, Dustin Johnson is leaving the PGA Tour, and now he's not eligible for the Ryder Cup. He's all in on this Live Tour golf now. He's $125 million. Can buy you a lot of loyalty. But that's it. He's now done with the PGA Tour, resigning effective immediately. Playing in the major championships and in Live Golf events. That's it. Interesting. The Ryder Cup, that's a loss. That would be a loss. Phil Mickelson, I'm going to be bummed if Mickelson's not the captain at Bethpage, but he doesn't look like he's going to be. I don't think he's going to be. I think now that die is cast now. I think he's not happening. Not happening. Amazing. This thing is weird, man.
I mean, how quickly the last 6 months? Right? I'm going to just throw it all in there.
Crazy.
When we first got the inkling of this tournament or this new league to where it is now. I mean, it's been a crazy 2022 in golf.
It really has, and again, I think you and I were talking about this earlier, about how we both were like, I don't know if this is going to get off the ground, and now I'm like, I think people are going to jump in on this.
Yeah.
I think this is going to work. I think Greg Norman, despite all of his stupidity and the way, what he has said.
How he handled it, I think, was
how
dumb.
How he handled it was so dumb. All of that, I don't think will matter. I think this is going to get off the ground, wait it out. Play with 48 guys where most people don't know the names, but eventually that money is going to get too enticing. You know, there might be enough big names that go, I'm never going no matter what. I'm loyal to the tour, European tour, PGA tour, whatever side of the ocean they're on. But I do think you're going to find a lot of younger players that got a lot of potential.
Now, there's
the next
question.
Jordan Spieth, who are like, I'm jumping right into the million-dollar swimming pool over there.
Maybe you know the answer to this, because I certainly don't.
Right.
Is there as much backlash with the European Tour as there has been with the PGA?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know that. That's really like, interesting.
Lee Westwood.
See,
He's Irish or English?
Yeah, English.
I mean, is he receiving the same amount of scrutiny as, say, Phil is?
They're saying that the ticket sales for the London event are terrible. Like, no one's buying them, and they're giving them away.
Okay.
Okay, I expected that. I'd be curious to see what the ticket sales will be in the United States. Like eventually, you're like, it's in my town. It's Phil and Dust. I'm going to go. They're not super expensive. I'm going to go. We'll see. They got a lot of money to weather the storm of bad ticket sales until eventually it does start coming in. But we'll see. But that's a really good question. Yeah, like Phil had to go into hiding, but I never felt like Phil had to go into hiding. I think it was like self-isolation.
Yeah.
I don't think we asked him to. I don't think it was like he can never show his face around here again.
And I know I asked you this during the last break we just had, but, you know, with Dustin Johnson resigning, you know, the possibility of Phil doing the same. If they decide to come back to the PGA, do they have to go to qualifying school?
Yeah, again? Yeah. If I was a PGA Tour, I'd make them. I'm like, yep, you're going to be showing up to Roswell Golf and Putt-Putt.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they
go to qualifying school.
But maybe the schooling is this. Maybe they don't have to do a tournament. We already know your golf prowess. But watch this video on the on how great the PGA is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you have to sit down and watch all the great PR videos for
you
the
need
tour.
To do 8 hours of seminars for the next couple of weekends.
Exactly.
So this never happens again.
So this is going to be really, really weird. Like it's going to be a team format. It's a shotgun start. Shotgun starts, they say that's good for the fans. That's not good for the fans. That's not good for the fans. I don't know why they believe it is. Because if you've ever played in a golf tournament that has a shotgun start, it's not because it's a better way to play golf. It's a faster way to play golf, right? So everybody starts on a hole. Everybody starts at the same time. And if you start on 13, then your final hole is the 12th, right? But lost in that is the ability for everybody to sort of absorb the course the way it's designed. Now, I know the argument will be like, well, Tony, they play on the 10th. Like, you go to a U.S. Open, some people start on 10, some people start on 1. I get it. But the final round doesn't start like that. And so what you want is, like, imagine the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass, for example, the Island Green. Or take, like, the 12th hole at Augusta. Imagine if that was your first hole.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the same as when it's you're fighting for the lead, it's coming down to the final holes, you got a one-shot lead, and you get to the Island Green. Right? It's not that. It's, oh, the Island Green was my third hole of the day. It's not the same. So, the team concept, be careful. That's not normally how golf is played. And in individual sports, the team concept can be a little weird, especially when you're fighting for prize money. Like, what exactly is the team concept? How is it? How will that work? Is it just Phil Mickelson plays his ball and Lee Westwood plays his on two different sides of the course and they just add them up at the end? They're not even doing teamwork things. Like, it's, you know, it's, I don't know how this is going to be, but man, losing Dustin Johnson for the Ryder Cup, that stinks. But the Americans gotten a lot of talent. And the European side is only losing guys that weren't going to make the Ryder Cup anyway. Like Lee Westwood, Charles Schwartzel, what? And Sergio Garcia. You know?
But you don't want a Sergio Garcia choking it on the last hole again?
I know, right? Well,
I think John Rahm is happy about that.
But
thank God I'm not partnered with him.
So picture yourself, you're Jordan Spieth. Oh, better yet, how about Tiger Woods? Like, imagine Tiger Woods today. He's coming out of Stanford. Nike's behind him. He's ready to take the world by storm. Why wouldn't the LIV Tour be enticing? Like, why wouldn't you be like, all right, I could do the PGA Tour thing, but that LIV Tour, man, I can go there and make a lot of money. I mean, young guys that are coming up, you may see this tour developing the Scottie Schefflers. But I go back to something. Remember that story I told you about? I told you a long time ago about Vince McMahon when he was hyping the XFL 20 years ago. I told you guys I was at this press conference. Vince McMahon came to Las Vegas and he was talking about how Kurt Warner was the poster boy for the XFL. A guy like him could be bagging groceries and playing football at the highest level and become a champion. But it was my colleague. She was the one that asked the question brilliantly. The only reason we know him is because of the Super Bowl. What do you have? Right? And that was a brilliant question because it reminded everybody in the room that the reason Kurt Warner was Kurt Warner was because he played in the NFL, not because he played quarterback at a high level and won a championship of some sort. So Vince McMahon at that press conference was trying to say, our guys can come from nowhere, and if they win our championship, well, that's like Kurt Warner winning a Super Bowl. And her question sort of reminded everybody, no, that's not true, because Kurt Warner won the biggest event we have in the world. And that's why he is who he is. Same thing here. If you're a young golfer, and you're coming out of Texas or Georgia or wherever that's got a really strong golf program, and you're heading to the PGA Tour, does the LIV Tour make you a Scottie Scheffler, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas? Or does the PGA Tour do that? Does winning on the PGA Tour do that? So if you win at Pumpkin Ridge on the LIV Tour, or you win the Waste Management Open at TPC Scottsdale, which one is bigger for your profile? Because right now it would be the Waste Management TPC Scottsdale victory. Wins on the PGA Tour still carry a lot of currency in world golf. What does the LIV Tour offer? If you win that in its quirky, weird, shotgun start, 54-hole team format, how does that equate to somebody winning the Greater Memphis Open? Those are legit questions for a young golfer weighing his options. Eric Edholm next, Yahoo Sports on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsmap Radio Network, a
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's talk some NFL with our good friend Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports, who joins us on a progressive guest line. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. All right, let's get a little bit of the news that made yesterday kind of out of the way. This is not hugely shocking, but Aaron Donald gets a nice deal. He's now the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. I said it all morning, like if you were to create a list of players, you would say, here's a list of players that would get this. I think Aaron Donald would be top or near the top of everybody's list.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. He's just so impactful in so many different ways. And a position of defensive tackle that I wouldn't say has been, you know, devalued, but it's certainly not the same position it was a generation ago where these guys were big, hulking, run-stuffing guys, and not that Donald can't do that. I almost said Aaron Rodgers. You know, obviously he can, but he's just doing it for a more compact frame. And, oh, by the way, he's the best interior pass we've seen maybe ever, you know. And so, you know, kind of this generation's John Randall with a little bit of juice. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, I think it's such a relief to the Rams. I don't know how much concern there was that he was going to retire. I think there was some legitimate thought and talk about that. Certainly winning a Super Bowl probably would have made it easier for him, but it's definitely got to be a relief for them to get him back and obviously make a run at another championship this season.
Teams that have these kind of players, and the Rams certainly have a number of good, really good players they'd like to keep around, these teams sort of break apart a bit as you go, I want to go here, they can't afford me there. But the Rams are unique because the Rams are like, well, we've mortgaged the future for the group of talent that we have here. They've already lost Von Miller, but how close are they to keeping most of the core for the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think in good shape. I mean, Cooper Kupp is obviously, you know, a crucial piece, and they have Stafford in a great situation. And, you know, there's even talk about them bringing back Odell. I mean, that actually happened. I think there's legitimate interest and possibility for that to occur as well. So, yeah, losing Vaughn is tough, and what they traded, I think, a second and a third round pick to get him. But, you know, if you could guarantee any GM that you give up a second and a third round pick for a guy to play half a season and you'd win a Super Bowl, you know, everybody makes that deal 10 times out of 10. So, yeah, their approach, I think, was so interesting. I did kind of a deeper dive and look back at Les Snead. He was the GM prior to them. You know, he was in St. Louis running the team, and they were a much more conservative outlet back then. It was like there was a switch that occurred as soon as they made the move to L.A., you know, knowing that they had the financial backing of Kroenke, that this is somebody who could keep cash in escrow and be willing to pay these high salaries and be willing to kind of hang on to their seats as they take an unconventional approach, essentially using draft as capital and not, you know, spending pick for pick and trying to develop that way. And you know, it's an approach I think that other teams have to consider mimicking. I mean, it just works so well, but you got to have, you know, still those homegrown players like Aaron Donald. People forget. It's not like they traded for him. So that's another interesting element of it, is that when you do have those high picks, you do have to kind of hit on them too.
It's so weird because, again, that old cliche, imitation is the biggest form of flattery. If you are a team and you're just looking for a different way to do it, maybe the draft thing hasn't quite worked and you're stuck in the mud. How willing are teams to take a chance with that approach? Because it seems risky, and if it doesn't pay off, you can be really stuck.
It really is tough. And obviously, it's easier for somebody like Brad Holmes, the Lions GM, who came from L.A., you know, spent many years working his way up the ladder there, getting to work with Les Snead up close the last several years before he left. You know, you go into an interview and say, hey, here's what I've taken away from Les. You know, I agree with him on, you know, this, and that. I might do something different in terms of this. You know, that you can sort of prepare a team's management for the plan that you're going to unroll. If you're deciding mid-career, this is the approach I want to take, the old school doesn't work, you know, it might be a little tougher because it might be viewed with more suspicion internally. You may not get your scouts to buy in. You know, there also is the case of knowing the team that you have and the best path to success from there. It's not the same for every single club. You could argue that, you know, the Rams kind of, you know, go for the gold is always the way you should go, and that's true, right? But at the same time, I think you have to also understand What is ownership going to allow us to do? You know, the Bengals don't make a Super Bowl, I don't believe, unless Mike Brown kind of changes his views on free agency. We're so, you know, thrifty for so long and never spent on free agents. And part of convincing Joe Burrow to want to play there with the first pick when he got it was, hey, we'll spend in free agency. And they did it the last 2 years, and it really kind of helped their team. So, you know, there again, there's some different philosophies that go against what they say is the scouting grain, and it's ended up working. But it also requires knowing your team and knowing what resources you can and have to work with.
All right, let's get to something a little bit on the darker side for this league, and that's Deshaun Watson. Where are we with this? Where do we feel an announcement is coming, or are they still doing a deep investigative dive into what was coming out?
Yeah, the NFL's been so mum on this. And obviously with new allegations coming in, I mean, look, a cynical person could say, what's the difference between 22 and 24? I'm not dismissing the allegations or the severity of them or the victims. Believe me, I'm not. I'm just laying out a scenario where some people would say a lot is a lot and a lot plus two is also a lot, right? But at the same time, the NFL does have to do its due diligence, and if there are new developments that came out, there were some pretty troubling allegations about a woman who, this most latest one, who said, you know, things occurred, I tried to put a stop to it, he kept going, she's not with the business. Like, there's real impact where these allegations can be proven to be true, or that they're, you know, obviously some concerning things here. And I think the NFL is going to want to be very careful that it reviews all the details and knows the totality of this prior to making a decision. Because whatever they do, stiff sentence, sucked, no sentence, it's going to come with criticism from some square of the universe, right? And so they've got to be able to kind of back up the facts and say, here's why we did what we did. Here's what we gleaned from this. You know, here's what was most troublesome. Here's what we were, you know, able to kind of decide. Because if they don't, if they come in, you know, having painted a picture that they believe is complete, and there are new details that have come out in these most recent cases that change the picture, they're obviously going to come under warranted and more criticism, I think.
And that's interesting because the Browns are in a wild spot because, again, with the guaranteed money and whatnot, if you get a huge suspension out of this, if you get a civil case that goes into 2023, which people are saying it is, plus you've got these comments by his lawyer, Rusty Hardin, that are just awful, all of this package, and then when it's all done and he can finally play, they go, hey guys, aren't you excited about your quarterback? And you've just went through this year and a half or so. How do they sell him? How do they've tried to sell him once. How are they going to sell him a second time?
I hate to say this, and I hope on some level I'm wrong about this. I think Andrew Brandt made this point, and I've kind of said similar things all along, again, being cynical and having seen other situations play out similarly. You know, we don't talk a bit about Roethlisberger's incident these
You're
days.
Right.
You know, that, you know, we don't. Once they get back on the field, terrible as this sounds, there's almost a cleansing of sorts, right? The first time he throws a touchdown pass, hey, here's the highlight video. Check out the Browns' big win over the Bengals, right. You know. And again, I mean, understand what sports are. They're entertainment, you know, they're kind of distractions or whatever, but they shouldn't obviously put the issues aside completely. I think for some people, once the game starts, you know, they're going to kind of wash their hands of it and say, okay, well, maybe he's not a great team, but boy, he can play. And I don't know. That's just sort of where we are. Half the people will remember, half will, whatever the numbers are. So I think the Browns are being smarter than Rusty Hardin, maybe by saying very much and not,
right.
You know, and, you know, soft-stepping on the issue very carefully here. And Hardin obviously is the, you know, obviously usually it's the lawyer telling the client to be quiet enough the way around. I'm imagining there's some of that going on now, but how Deshaun Watson sells himself is important, and how he, you know, you remember how Mike Vick, this is different apples to oranges, but remember how much he threw himself into the dog violence, you know, the anti-violence realm, and really tried to act as a, you know, promoter for those causes. I mean, boy, I think it really helped him. And I think people, there were not everybody, but I think a lot of people believe, you know what, this is a guy who made a mistake, who's learned from it, and we can move on. I don't know that that'll ever happen full scale with Watson, but I do think once the games start, there will be a little more apathy about it.
All right, let's get to San Francisco. Not a big surprise that, Garoppolo has been dismissed, still dealing with some injuries and whatnot, but it does lend itself to speculation as to where he's going to land. What do we know so far? What are the Niners thinking about their quarterback situation?
Yeah, I think Carolina is still the most likely option, but they don't, excuse me, they don't want to pay that salary. I mean, that's, you know, what, $6 million or whatever it is. And, you know, they made it clear. They had this really kind of awkward situation during the draft, whatever. You know, passing the quarterback, they have another pick in round four. They're engaging in talks with Cleveland for Baker Mayfield. It's bizarre little triangle in those three teams, essentially, where, you know, somebody wants to either get a quarterback or trade a quarterback. So many elements to this thing, and obviously Garoppolo's surgery and the money he's due to be paid are big impediments for this. And now the you know, the Panthers are in a situation where they're saying, okay, can we afford to pay Garoppolo, Darnold, and a third round pick here, or was a fifth, maybe a fourth round pick, whatever Corral was. You know, and that's a lot to figure out. And how do we make the reps work once they get on the field and things like that? And, you know, is this the best situation for us? Can the 49ers feel good about Trey Lance to the point where they just say, okay, Jimmy's out the door and we've got to move on and we have to clear the salary and everything. So, It's a little tricky on both sides, I think. And I don't know that it's still as imminent or anything like that. I haven't heard anything to that degree. They're still dealing with the Debo situation, although he's reported as well. And so, I don't know. It's a lot to sort of figure out, especially in a tough division like that.
Eric at home again, Yahoo Sports on the NFL. Always good talking to you, my friend. We'll catch up with you soon. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. All right. See you, man.
Love it, man. Eric at home. Good stuff. All right, when we come back, very little interesting. What were you saying to me earlier, Ron, about
creepiest national anthem.
All right, that's right. The creepiest national anthem. That's coming up next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Eric at home of Yahoo Sports for joining us on our Progressive Guest Line. All right, we promised you the most creepiest national anthem.
Yeah.
So when and where did this take place?
I believe this took place yesterday.
Okay.
The lady's name, I'm going to try to find it for you real quick, is like Carolyn McCaskey or something like that. And this was done at the Oakland Coliseum.
Oh, all right.
All right. So, I mean, you know, Oakland, famous for getting packed stadiums. Right?
Right. Yeah, it's like 8,000 strong.
Oh, you're being overly generous.
I think I might be overly generous.
So they decided and thought it was a good idea to have, I believe her name was Carolyn McCaskey, it doesn't really matter, to come out and do the national anthem. And you were talking about national anthems earlier.
Right.
About how Canada has a tradition where the singer just says one line and then they take it away.
Right.
And we don't even have lips moving. And this might be another reason why, because this has got to be, hands down, the creepiest version of the national anthem. I'm not going to play the whole thing.
Love it.
But you just so you can hear the beginning part. You ready?
Yes.
Now, I'm not going to deny her talent because she's doing this on a saw.
I was going to say, what is she doing? Is she doing that thing where you put the glass rim and you go with water and you make these? Is she doing that? What is this?
This is. I think she's like taking a violin bow and playing it on a saw.
Oh my God, it's kind of talented.
It's talented. I'm not going to deny the talent.
That sounds like if I heard this in a dark house, I'd run.
Yeah. You know? Oh, you would not stay. You would open that door. You heard this music playing in a dark room. And you'd go, nope. And
some patriotic poltergeist out in the out in the house. Like, no, thank you. Yeah, this is really weird. Like this. Yeah, yeah. When you said creepy, that's the right word for this.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is an Independence Day haunted film.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what it is. I guess we didn't
could
end up playing
sell,
the whole thing.
She seriously could sell this. You're right. As a fourth, if you had like red, white, and blood, and it, this could be like the opening music.
Caroline McCaskey.
Right?
Thank you.
She's not even excited.
No.
Caroline McCaskey. Thank you.
Got through that one.
Whatever that was.
What
okay.
is Oakland doing?
We're back here at Oakland Coliseum. That was great. Yeah. No doubt. That is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
That is.
The Independence Day Massacre.
Yeah. Well, remember Maurice Cheeks was the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers and he ran out to that little girl?
Yeah,
like,
helped her
out.
How
sweet that was. It's like, what am I, that melting my heart.
But who needs that when you can have, some lady playing on a saw?
Let me tell you what now. If you are going out there, play the national anthem on a saw, you better land that performance. Because the moment you screw up, people are like, what are we doing? Why was you letting a woman out there with a saw and a violin bow?
Yeah.
And she messed up the national anthem. You better make sure she knows that like the back of her hand.
You'd have fans going, bring back Fergie.
Right. Bring back Fergie. Exactly. Exactly. At this point, I'll take Roseanne Barr. Remember that? Where she yelled and spit on the ground. God. Well, that was kind of creepy. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, and this is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.